Ladies and gentlemen, if you could take your seats, please. We'll just start this meeting. We'll call together a meeting of the Delta Stewardship Council, but it's actually also a what's called a scoping session, which is a characterization of various briefing and background material gathering techniques that are required under state law, the California Environmental Quality Act, and that brings us here tonight. This is one of seven meetings statewide that are scoping, and they happen in addition to all the regular council meetings. I'm going to shortly introduce Mr. Grindstaff to talk about this, but I want to make a couple notations. The meeting is being recorded, thus the use of the microphones. We'd normally be able to hear, but the folks say if we use the microphones and you also use the microphone up in front if you wish to talk, that'll allow us to get better quality reception for the recording. The recordings will be posted within 24 hours, Mr. Alvarez, is that correct? Within 24 hours of this meeting on the council website, available as part of the public record. In addition, because this is a scoping session under environmental law, you see a young lady sitting over there in the corner looking mysterious, but she is a court reporter taking down a transcript of this hearing in addition to the electronic recording, which is customarily the way for major projects and scoping activities goes on and proceeds. All of this information is part of the official record of the council, which is an arm of state government. And let me just explain very briefly some background for this. In late 2009, the legislature and Governor Schwarzenegger passed a major package of bills dealing with water, the Delta ecosystem, and other aspects, including a bond issue, which was authorized. One of the bills, and a copy of it is back at the table for your use, was Senate Bill number one in the seventh extraordinary session, complicated legal title, but it was a bill by Senator Simidian and Senator Steinberg, which was the governance section, and it is a very complicated piece of legislation, did a whole bunch of things, but part of it is it created the Delta Stewardship Council. And my colleague, the vice chair, Mr. Randy Fiorini, who many of you know already, farms in Turlock and other areas around here, formerly the president of Aqua and board member of various water districts and so on. Mr. Fiorini and I were two of the people appointed by the governor to a seven-member commission. I was honored to get their support for being elected chair of that commission. I'm Phil Eisenberg, by the way. I forgot to mention that. The legislation is very detailed, as I mentioned, but our duties are clear. We were directed by the legislation to prepare, adopt, and begin implementation of a legally enforceable Delta plan no later than January 1st, 2012, which is not much time as these things go. The legislation talked about a bunch of things that Mr. Grindstaff, our executive director, will mention, which focus our duties and our responsibilities. But basically, the policy is driven by what we've come to call, and the legislation called, co-equal values. And you'll see in the material that's been handed out tonight at the bottom of our stationery and throughout this, that we constantly reference the co-equal values, which are a more reliable water system for California and a preserved, protected, and improved Delta ecosystem, achieved in a way that takes account of the unique characteristics of the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta as an emerging area. There are many other instructions and guidelines in the legislation, but the co-equal goals is where we are moving to develop this plan. Because it is a legally enforceable plan, it is a state regulation and will have great impact on state agencies and some local agencies. As you might imagine, that's always a subject of big argument. Everybody says, well, you can study whatever you want, but as long as I have to do something about it, you have to ask my permission first. And what we're doing tonight is fact-gathering to get your opinions on the widest range of issues. In the notice to the meetings that were published in the newspaper, I know many of you are on our email distribution list. If you'd like to be added and you're not presently on that list, just leave your email here. But you received a document called the Notice of Preparation. And the Notice of Preparation is the starting point for the environmental review process that we're undertaking now. And that outlined in 27 pages, so roughly, our staff says about 27 pages, maybe a bit more, a kind of a rough structural outline, and reference the laws under which we're operating. We have a lot of work to do, but we can only do the work meaningfully if we get input from folks. As I mentioned, this is the second scoping meeting. The first was in Diamond Bar in Southern California last night, and Mr. Fiorini presided over that meeting. So, Mr. Grindstaff, let me introduce you. The executive director of the Delta Stewardship Council is Mr. Joe Grindstaff. He performed the same duty for our predecessor agency, CalFed Bay Delta, for those of you in the water community. That was an activity that went on 16 years, Joe, in total?
Well, is this microphone on?
Yes. If it's got a green light on it, it's on.
Okay. CalFed was a program that lasted from about 1994 is when they started working on it, and they actually developed a record of decision by 2000 and was subsumed by this act in 2009. The chair has covered a lot of the key issues that we need to cover tonight, so I'm not going to waste everybody's time, but I'll try and go through this fairly quickly. First, I wanted to introduce everybody, and you've already met the chair, Phil Eisenberg, and Randy Fiorini, the vice chair. I want to introduce a couple of other people here. Keith Coolidge, standing at the back as the chief deputy director at the council. Terry McCauley, Eric Alvarez, Gwen Buchholz is right up here. She raised her hand. Good. So their staff, and if you have questions after the meeting, would like to talk with them, feel free to talk to them to address any questions you have. The purpose of the scoping meeting is to make sure that you understand the mandate for the Delta Plan and to receive input from you. So part of what happens and what is outlined in the scoping document is the requirement for the Delta Plan, which was a requirement of legislation. One of the key things that we're looking for is input on the strategies that we should put into the Delta Plan, that we should implement as we move ahead, strategies that will help us achieve the co-equal goals that are defined as the major purpose of the Delta Plan as we move ahead. That's the key thing we'd like to hear from you. And we're going to be seeking not only comments here verbally, we're also happy to take written comments, both here tonight, if you want to handwrite something, if you want to mail something, or if you want to email something. And I'm going to give you the addresses for that here in just a minute. Now, the agenda tonight is going to be scoping comments first, and then we recognize there may be some people who want to comment on things that are not part of the scoping process. Last night in Diamond Bar, we had a couple of people that said we don't really want to talk about scoping things, but we want to address the council. So at the end of the meeting, after we're finished with scoping comments, the chair will ask for other public comments. So that's kind of the process we'll be using tonight. The chair mentioned the co-equal goals, and I think it's important that we just always put that up there. This is the exact language from the statute that says we're supposed to achieve a more reliable water supply and enhance and restore the Delta ecosystem, and we're supposed to do it in a way that protects and enhances the unique values of the Delta. So it's a big charge. we have clearly, as a state, not met that objective over the last 50 or 100 years. The Delta ecosystem has been in decline, and as everybody is aware, the water supply system has not been nearly as reliable as we'd like. So that's clearly the objective that we have as we move ahead. The Delta Plan has kind of as its core objectives that were outlined by the legislature. And as you read the scoping document, you will note that we're choosing to try and summarize those objectives in six key areas. We talk about water supply reliability, ecosystem restoration, development of the Delta as place, and that's part of that protecting and enhancing the unique values of the Delta. And we talk about risk reduction. One of the other sections of the law says the Delta Plan has to reduce risk in the Delta, and there's significant risk of earthquake in particular and flooding in particular in the Delta. So one of the things it talks about in the law is reducing risk. Water quality is another element in the plan that's required in the statute. So that's a separate section. And then last of all, finance and governance. So those kind of six main areas are the main areas that are identified in the scoping document that you have. And the strategies to address those areas are things that we're interested in hearing from you. As the chair said, we have a series of meetings. Here's a list of where the meetings are. And I do want to mention the schedule. We have a very serious time deadline and a council that is resolute that we are going to meet the deadline that's imposed on us by the legislature. In order to do that, we're having these scoping meetings. We plan to begin the public process of reviewing a draft Delta plan in February. Our plan is to have, I think, 7 public drafts of the Delta plan beginning in mid-February. We hope to have the first draft. Beginning then, we'll start having 4 days of meetings per month to review those drafts. We expect to have a second draft in March and a third draft in April. And in May, we hope to have a final public review draft. I may get the terminology wrong. That is actually released in June as the draft, along with the draft EIR, for formal public comment. We'll have a public comment period then that lasts till probably the end of July, maybe into August. And then beginning in August again, we will bring back the comments from the formal process and have another draft Delta plan. Then we expect to take comments and make decisions. The council will make decisions about changes to be made and have a second draft after all of that discussion, and then a third draft, the final draft Delta plan, we expect to be approved, we believe, in November of this coming year. This November, we expect to have a final draft Delta plan. So there will be many opportunities for people to comment. But the first step in the process is actually to talk about the scoping and what should be included and what strategies in particular we should be looking at. Know that there will be many, many opportunities as we move ahead, and it will be a very intense process. When we get this done in November, that allows us to submit the Delta Plan to the Office of Administrative Law so that it can become a regulation and be certified and take effect January 1st, which is the objective under state law. Okay? Comment. We have the ability to take oral comments. We'll ask you to come up, stand at the microphone, and give us your comments. We do have some sign-in cards we'd ask you to use. I think, are they blue? So if you'd like to speak, we'll come around and collect those in a minute, and then the chair will ask you to come up and speak. If you'd like to write a written comment today, that would be fine. If you'd like to send a mailed comment in, you can send that to Terry McCauley at the address up here on the screen. You can send a comment to via email, and we'll be glad to get all of those comments. And feel free to look at our website, where we have all of this information up and available as we move ahead. So, and at the end, we're going to come back to the public comment for things that are not part of the scoping, so you can have the opportunity to make comments on other things that are not part of the agenda. With that, I'm going to turn this back over to the chair, and he can proceed with asking for comments.
Thank you very much. I forgot to mention one thing. We had blocked out from 6 to 8 o'clock to complete the meeting, and we'll try to hold to that. Obviously, if there are people who need to talk later than that, I'll stay around for a little bit later during the meeting, but we'll accommodate your wishes. The other thing is, we would really urge you to fill out the blue form, and when you print your name or organization, would you print as clearly as you can, because the poor court reporter has to verify what she writes down as to spelling an accurate name, and I'm a offender of this rule. Nobody can read my handwriting, and it's not very good, even if you could read it. So I have been ordered always to be careful and slowly print everything I write. So I would urge you all to do that. So, ladies and gentlemen, that is the start. Mr. Fiorini, do you have anything to add? No. Okay. Now, we're going to start off with the scoping comments on the work we're underway. Do we have a party who would like to provide us with scoping comments? Don't be shy. Where's Art? Okay. As a matter of fact, as an accomplished public speaker, you're also going to wind up adjusting the height of the microphone and other things and testing it out so we can make sure it works. If you would, please. And okay. For the record and the people who are here, if you could identify yourself and identify the organization you're representing, please.
Yes. For the record, Arthur Godwin. I'm not here really representing anyone. I'm here on my own tonight. But I just had sort of an overall question is, and I don't see it anywhere in the notice of preparation, but how is the Delta plan going to impact this area?
You mean you want us to pull out the book with everybody's name in the state of California? And the answer is, nobody knows yet. The scoping document, however, points out two important activities. The legislation called for the Delta plan to ensure long-term planning for the co-equal goals. And we have proposed a planning horizon that runs out to the year 2100. And I know that sounds like an eternity, but it's only 89 years as we stand today. And many planning documents that are similar go out that far. The plan will have contained within it staff-recommended staging of various activities. The issue for how the plan might affect this area is premised on several things. First and fundamentally, the question is this area or any area an area that impacts the Delta? And as you know, we are here in what's called the Delta Watershed. And that is the area that runs from close to the Oregon border down south beyond here into the valley, largely but not exclusively composed of the Sierra Nevada. And the runoff, the rain and the snow melt that provides most of the precipitation, I guess 40% of the precipitation in California, has historically flowed into the valley, through the Delta, out into San Francisco Bay, and whatever's left into the ocean. Secondly, there are folks down here who receive or use water from the Delta, exported through the state facilities, or in some cases, depending on where you are in the valley, through the Central Valley Project, the federal facility. In addition, the legislation directs us to promote statewide water conservation. The legislation directs us to take account of various planning activities that are going on in other stages. So, for example, the Central Valley Flood Control planning process and entity is engaged in a multi-year project for the entire Central Valley, which includes part but not all of the statutory delta, to establish standards and requirements and so on. We have a duty to examine those plans if they're available and to choose to incorporate all or some of the parts if appropriate. I should probably tell you that with a few exceptions, none of the other studies that are underway will be completed before we adopt the Delta Plan. And the statute recognizes that possibility because they tell us two things. Every 5 years, the council must review the Delta Plan and amend as needed. And secondly, we have the authority to amend earlier than 5 years if we believe that the circumstances justify it. The impacts will be felt initially on planning documents. So, for example, once a Delta's plan's adopted, one of the things that both local counties will ask themselves and cities, certainly in the statutory Delta itself, but even surroundings, are there any planning decisions you're making that would be relevant to the issue? I think this one is probably not relevant here, but we know that one of the factors we're ordered to consider in the legislation is the anticipated sea level rise by the year 2100. The legislation says that it may be as much as 55 inches. That is of fundamental importance.
That rules us out here.
Yeah, I understand. That is of fundamental importance in the Bay and in parts of the Delta. It's of lesser so the farther you get away from the ocean areas. But all of that together with questions of pollution as it affects the water quality of the Delta, the fish species in the Delta, the habitat, all come to bear. That's not a precise answer to every one of your questions, but it is, it's remarkable that in my judgment, that the legislature went as far as they did in creating a body to adopt a legally enforceable Delta plan with statewide implications, albeit focused at the Delta, as on the Delta as the fulcrum of water and environmental issues in the state.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, who's next? Grab that blue form and come talk to us. Mr. Daldorf, if nobody stands up, you're going to be giving a 75-minute lecture on behalf of your client. Okay. Why did you do this? Mr. Grindstaff, I think this is going to be more fruitful if we shift back and forth between the council meeting where it's kind of open comments and questions and the scoping meeting, if that's possible. Ms. Buchholz, is that possible to do? And if you think we have to flag testimony or comment as scoping, you wave at us and let us know. Okay, why do we do this? There are bound to be some questions. People have shown up here taking their dinner hour and setting it aside, and so why don't you come on up and grab the microphone. Let's see if we can answer any of your questions or hear what you have to say to us.
Can I suggest that we mention BDCP and the requirement in law that it be incorporated into the Delta Plan?
Yeah. There is another process in life. America believes in meetings and endless studies, but there's a process called the Bay Delta Conservation Plan. That's not us, but we have a relationship to it. It's the very big and controversial study project that Governor Schwarzenegger started in 2006, and it involves basically an activity of multiple federal agencies, multiple state agencies, the state water contractors, that is, the entities that export water from the Delta, And it's not all to the valley. It, you know, some goes to Southern California, some goes to Alameda County, some goes to Santa Clara County, some goes to San Francisco, the Contra Costa Water District. You know, so a lot of people get water from the Delta. And that is an institution that is trying to develop alternatives and recommend a chosen alternative for a new Delta water conveyance system. There's one there right now. Pumps are up at Tracy, connected to the federal state system through long meanderings around, but there's a lot of concern that the system is not adequate for a host of reasons. The Bay Delta Conservation Plan was one of the main features in the legislation. By the way, I have a goldenrod copy only because it's the one I got at the end of 2009, and the white version, white document in the back, exactly the same, exactly the same. And this this legislation is kind of interesting. It indicates the Bay Delta conservation is going ahead. The legislature mandated very high environmental standards that the Bay Delta Conservation Plan must meet for facilities. Joe, stop me if I go overboard. Including what's called a Habitat Conservation Plan and a Natural Communities Conservation Plan. Federal and state, as some politicians call it, the gold standard on environmental review. And they're large system-wides. It's not like I'm building a 3-mile road and I want to study the impacts of that road. These are system evaluations. The legislation says Bay Delta Conservation Plan do a bunch of things. If they adopt a plan, and if the California Department of Fish and Game certifies that the environmental laws have been met, the plan shall be adopted as part of our Delta plan. However, any person may appeal the Department of Fish and Game decision to the Stewardship Council. Now, that doesn't mean we get to rewrite the plan, but as I understand legal advice, we can say yes, we can say no, or we can return for information. That's at least the advice we've received from the Attorney General. It will be a big and deeply controversial issue, as you might imagine. At the same time, the Stewardship Council, us, have been given what's called a role in preparing of this plan as a responsible agency. And that, all that means is a governmental institution interested and involved in dealing with this. So we have an obligation to comment on the process that's going on. Now, it'll come as no surprise to any of you who read newspapers or watch television that water tends to generate controversy. The composition of the Bay Delta Conservation Plan, who's in, who's out, what they're recommending, what they aren't recommending, is very contentious. To date, the Bay Delta Conservation Plan has cost a ton of money, all paid for by water contractors, not by state taxpayers, by local water users, and the estimates of cost are approximately, to date, $150 million. However, I know that sounds outrageously high. When you talk about Delta conveyance systems for water and ecosystem improvements related to that, you're talking about billions of dollars. As you know, you build a university campus down here, and what was the estimated starting cost? $2 billion of everything just to get up and running with, I think, the third year of the classes. So this is a big, big, big capital project. There's presently a dispute going on as to whether the additional funds to complete the process will be achieved. My instinct is they will, but we'll wait and see, and maybe Randy knows more about that than I do. But it's important. It's a separate operation, but their activities are related to us because the legislation tells us what we have to do, but also we are an appellate body from that determination. It's quite interesting, quite interesting. Randy, anything you want to add to that? Okay. Joe, did that do it?
That's it.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, have I properly confused everyone? Yes, sir. Because this is an official hearing, would you mind using the microphone? I hate to ask the press to do that, but I understand it's just a question, but we've got a record to maintain. The mic's coming your way. Wait, you don't have to go up front. But if you could identify yourself, your station, and then ask the question, we'll go from there.
I'm Vic Bedoyan, and I'm with Pacifica Radio. My question is, does the Delta EIR that you are overseeing, will that take into account or deal with the proposed peripheral canal or tunnel or conveyance as part of your what you're looking at?
Well, the answer is in part, for sure it will. And the legislation that created us, it gave us the co-equal goals, but it used 8 specific objectives that the legislature and Governor Schwarzenegger, now law of the land, say are essential to meeting those goals. And let me just, one of them, section 85020 sub F, is improve the water conveyance system and expand statewide water storage. That's one of our obligations. Now, it didn't say how big, how small, how fast, how soon. It didn't say reservoir in your house. It gave us the general directions. But yes, the Delta Plan will have to do that. We're having a discussion now on a this may sound like a bizarre legal question, but may we use information, public information, in the Bay Delta Conservation Plan process? It's a public process. A lot of information is available. May the council use publicly available information and consider that without jeopardizing our role as an appellate body from a decision they make? I apologize for that confusion. And the answer, we're going to get an opinion from the Attorney General. Is it at this meeting? It'll be available publicly shortly. I think I won't pledge this will be their answer until I see the final version. But I think they're going to say, because the legislation told you you had to observe and comment on the process, but you also had to be an appellate body, as long as you're clear of what you're going to consider, whether you use it or not, and do it all in public, and the information is public, there should not be a problem. I think that's what they're going to say. So, yes, we're going to consider it. We will not, however, Ms. Buchholz is the lead on our consulting team of CH2M Hill, who consult on the development of the Delta Plan and the Environmental Impact Report. I think it's fair to say we're not doing our own runs. We're not designing our own facility. We are, you know, that's beyond our capacity. I mean, they've spent a lot of money to get to the point where they are. But the basic proposals that you're starting to see mentioned in the press, there have been at least one big change. Although no action formally has been taken, there is at least a growing indication of support from some of the key parties that a tunnel, as opposed to a surface ditch or line canal, is probably the preferred alternatives. I defer to other experts on the design reason for that, but certainly one of the main factual reasons is there is less disruption of land activity on the land if you're tunneling underground. By the way, everything's expensive. There is no such thing as a cheap freeway, school, hospital, or water delivery system in California.
So part of the EIR will be the impact of the various proposed means of moving water around, or not? Are you just going to look at the Delta as it is now?
Well, you're required under law to examine the status quo, because one of the alternatives you always consider in an environmental impact report is not doing anything. Right. And so there's a pretty substantial body of evidence that, as Mr. Grindstaff mentioned, the Delta ecosystem is deteriorating. There is a body of evidence, including 4 state reports called the State Water Plan Reliability Report, that the reliability of the state water plan is dropping, is declining. Now, some of that may be expected. I mean, the water facilities, the big ones in the state, the newest ones, the federal system, was 1950. The state system was started and mostly completed in the 1960s. As with all big capital improvements, they have a life expectancy. They have maintenance problems. And so it should surprise no one that there are difficulties with it. We know, just an illustration, the State Water Project zips through the south, the San Joaquin and the South Valley. Land subsidence south of here has caused some dips in the State Water Project. Now, nothing to break the facilities yet, but as you know from your own experience, people design level roads for a reason. They design level water conveyance systems for a reason, a whole host of reasons. Anyway, all that is part of it, but the real object I'd suggest to you is the co-equal goals and the eight objectives lay it out, and the legislation gives to us the duty of adopting a legally enforceable plan that essentially will guide state agency and to some extent local agency behavior in these mixed areas of water supply and delta ecosystem. Not easy, not easy. I hope that's sufficient. Gwen, did I say anything I shouldn't say? Ms. Buchholz? No? Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Could you say your name again so the court reporter, slowly, and spell it if it's...
Victor, V-I-C-T-O-R, Bedoyan, B-E-D-O-I-A-N.
Thank you very much. Okay. All right, follow-up comment? No? Okay, thank you. Victor, could we get you to fill out one of those blue forms carefully printed, too? That'd be great. Thank you. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, other questions, concerns, comments? Yes, ma'am.
Hi, Katie Patterson, San Joaquin Farm Bureau. I kind of wanted to come here with the expectation of going through the notice of preparation and just identifying some questions
If you would, that would be great.
So I figured that those will mostly be caught here. I don't anticipate that they're all going to be answered here, but I also have to state that I represent my members in San Joaquin County, and I'm not speaking for any of the members that are here in Merced area. I'm actually kind of surprised by the light crowd, too, because I would think that people would have a lot of interest in such a large area that could potentially bring them into what's going on in the Delta. Okay, so preparation of this Delta plan. There's conversation in here talking about meeting the needs for reasonable and beneficial uses of water. And my question on that is, who's going to conduct that oversight of what's reasonable and beneficial? I know that the Delta Water Master just put out his report. Now, is that something that's going to go through the State Water Resource Control Board and then ultimately be contested within your body? How is that going to play out?
The language you're referring to comes from Article 10 of the state constitution, right, adopted by the voters in 1928 after a long to protracted legal dispute between users in Superior, California. And I don't think we brought that constitutional language, but it basically says that water should be used for beneficial purposes. But it also says the use must be reasonable and there can be no wasting. That's the language of the Constitution. The Water Board clearly has authority to enforce that, but other state agencies, including the Department of Water Resources, have the ability to enforce it. Mm-hmm. From our perspective, we have to ask ourselves the question on all the things we're considering, do constitutional principles apply? I mean, the Constitution is the supreme law of the state of California. There's nothing higher than that. And it's going to have great play. The lady mentioned a report from somebody called the Delta Water Master. That's a newly appointed position by the State Water Board, created by the same statute, where the legislature and the governor told the Water Board, appoint a person with delegated duties that are similar to the duties of the Water Board, but pursue it aggressively and within the Delta. You can read the language specifically for yourself. He wrote his first report 10 days ago, released the first report 10 days ago. He's directed to issue reports, among other things, and it focused on the application of Article 10 to agricultural water use. His opinion, which you can read, and we're going to hear his report. The Water Board heard his report today, and I believe we're hearing that from him next week. And basically he said, sure, all water use in California is subject to the Constitution. And I don't know of any lawyer who disagrees with that, although there are vast arguments about what it means subject to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure. Okay, so that's clear as mud. in terms of how that's going to play out. planning area. You have a spiffy little map in here. And within that little map here, you've got the primary planning area, which is identified as the primary zone in the Delta, very clear. The secondary planning area, I might offer a suggestion here. You have the Delta watershed and areas tributary to the watershed, which makes sense. You know, those are the natural flows in there. But then you also have in there the areas that use water from the Delta watershed. And I would contest that that's something that's a little bit more unnatural and more disconnected, even though we do have conveyance that does link those. And perhaps identifying that as a third area, because I think that they're going to have some different, you would view them differently because they're not necessarily putting in to the watershed, they're taking out. And whether that's metered, you know, in amounts, that those should be viewed differently.
The classic Delta watershed users, the folks who live in the Sierra Nevadas and Northern California and down here, all, and me in Sacramento, we all use water that used to flow directly into the Delta, but we divert, in Sacramento, my hometown, we like to claim that we put 57% of the water we use back in the river. But we are taking out permanently from the river system water that historically flowed into the Delta. And the argument is that whether people divert water before it reaches the Delta, or whether they wait until the Delta, the water gets in the Delta and then export it, both uses potentially cause problems for the Delta, as does urban runoff from city streets and oil from a car or truck that drips on the street, or pollution from industrial or agricultural soil. All of those are potentially, just human civilization has consequences. And so the planning area you see there is, if not identical, very close to the same planning area that was involved in CalFed Bay Delta, the predecessor to this organization. We took over their responsibilities and duties. And it's basically the largest population of California and a good slug of the land mass. But the major hinging feature is the rivers and streams that used to feed the Delta, the Bay, are affected by all of us.
Right.
And that was really the planning purpose. So we've heard a lot of arguments, and I should tell you, Randy and I have traveled around a bit, and the argument is, well, as long as you exclude me from this planning area, this is okay. And we've heard that throughout the state of California, and the result would be there would be no planning area because no one wants to adjust their behavior. It's hard to imagine how you can have a more reliable water supply for California and a protected and restored Delta ecosystem without at least considering all the people who use the water that used to flow into the Delta, or they take water from the Delta. By the way, this includes the farmers in the Delta as well, as you know, some in your jurisdiction, who are outraged with the claim that they have anything to do with the condition of the Delta.
And I anticipate that will be a sharply contested meeting.
It will indeed. It will indeed.
Okay, moving along. Thank you. There is the question on BDCP. I think you answered that with an optimistic spin that BDCP will be successful. In the event that it's not, do you carry on with the idea that there will be adjustments
We have struggled with this because BDCP is really important in the legislation, mm-hmm. but the legislation tells us to consider a whole bunch of other studies and reports. I don't know, Ms. Buchholz, we counted up a number, 14 or 16
that
comes
were listed in the notice.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and virtually none of them will be complete by the time we have to adopt a plan. And my anticipation is, and we've said, subject to legal review and subject to the environmental process, that to the extent there is good evidence available in any of these planning efforts, we want to examine that evidence. To the extent there are clear policy recommendations from those other processes, we want to consider them. However, we can't stop and not do anything wait for them to be completed. Good number of them were supposed to be completed years ago, but you know there's no such thing as peace and harmony in the water world, and never has been in my experience. So we're going to try to do the best we can by using the best available science, the best available engineering information, and the best available research and studies that can be found from all the sources, and that's part of the environmental process. You'll start to see in the drafts of the Delta Plan and the environmental documents a compendium of research. Mm-hmm. You'll start to see characterizations of what we think are the best available science. By the way, those are the word best available science, specifically in the statute, we're told, use the best available science. In politics, people like science, but if they don't like the science that's currently available, they always want to do new studies until they get a result they like. That's on all sides of the issue.
You can make an issue say just
yeah, and
anything.
So this language, which is starting to crop up in state and federal laws frequently, is the rule that says, look, we can't answer every question with 100% certainty. We have to decide. Society can't stand still. So we're going to do the best we can on that and identify as clearly as we can the information upon which we're relying.
Okay. I'm going to move into, let's see, this is the water conservation and water use efficiency section. On line 9, it talks about agricultural water conservation, and it talks about implementation, cost-effective, and technically feasible water efficiency management practices. And then it goes down to another sub-point that talks about agricultural water conservation requirements that expand upon objectives under SBX 7, such as strategies to include all technically feasible efficient management practices. And I'm guessing technically feasible being used twice and cost-effective only being used once. I want to make sure that those are going to be linked because something that may be technically feasible isn't always cost effective, and I want to get maybe a little more.
The Vice Chair, Mr. Fiorini, knows all on this subject.
Mm-hmm. Both are equally important.
Well, and they will be equally weighted together?
As far as I'm concerned, they will be.
Okay. Okay. I think that we'd be concerned a little bit with the increased requirements for tracking and reporting. But I think that's just a train that's continuing to move forward, so another conversation another day. I kind of want to get into a little bit of a conversation, and Mr. Eisenberg, I think that you probably have some really good knowledge here in dialogue on the Prop 26 and how that affects a lot of the aspects that are being proposed in this notice of preparation, and how is that going to really play with the fees, whether it's on those Delta trails or whether it's, how you're going to manage, different resource areas? Or I'd like to have some conversation on that.
Okay.
Hear what the thinking is.
Probably background. The voters in November of last year adopted Proposition 26, which is just the latest one of a variety of limitations on taxes or limitations on fees. And the antecedents for Prop 26 go back to Proposition 8, 208, which was also approved by the voters some years ago, which put limits on how local governments could impose and raise fees. And the general thrust of that is to make it harder and harder and harder to do in the hopes you don't get them. That's my opinion of it. Other people have a different view, but that's the practical impact. The water fraternity generally is asking itself exactly the same question you've asked. Randy used to chair AQUA. AQUA set up the Association of California Water Agencies. All of them in the state, I guess, now are involved, and they are trying to get the various diverse legal opinions to determine it. So, for example, a lot of people say in the state, okay, well, you want to build a dam. Well, I'm not going to use any water, so I don't want to pay anything for it. So users should pay for it. Well, does Proposition 26 prohibit the state, a regional water agency, or a local water agency from imposing fees to pay for a desired storage facility without a direct vote of the people? The answer is maybe yes, maybe no. Now, the genesis of this fight didn't have anything to do with water at all. It was a court case called Sinclair Paint, where regulatory fees imposed on paint companies for the obligation to remove toxic chemicals from the paint was objected to by the industry, and that became the banner for the crusade. But as written, the concern is it may cover a host of activities. So all the local water districts are looking at this, and nobody can really answer with precision your question. I do think, however, you've raised a startlingly important fact that we ought to pay attention to. whether it's transportation policy or water or stormwater, the theory is users who benefit should pay. But the practice has been to have the general taxpayers supplement all or substantial part of the local cost, largely using what are called general obligation bonds, bonds voted by the voters, full faith and credit of the state stands behind it. And if you're a local district, if you can, like Randy, he was on the board up at Turlock, and they, you never said this, but other people would say it. Gee, if somebody else can pay 80% of the cost, that means I only have to pick up 20% of the cost. Well, the economic troubles the state's going through are slowly tamping down general fund bonds because it's general tax money that pays the borrowing cost on general obligation bonds. It's not user fees, not beneficiary fees. It's everybody. If it's a public purpose, it's legal. If it's, anyway. The problem you've got is if the public ability to finance these major commitments on infrastructure is slowly declining because of the bad economy and these legal restrictions, and if you cannot easily or more easily impose fees on interested benefited parties, who's left to pay? The tooth fairy is the preferred choice because it ain't me and it ain't thee, it's, you know, somebody else. It's a very difficult legal question, and it's bothering everybody on all sides of the water issue. Bothers the environmental community, bothers the business community, bothers agriculture because they're starting to evaluate the projects they want against their ability to impose fees to help pay for it. We don't know.
I think that's something that we need to have a little more clarity on because there's a lot of places here in your notice of preparation where that would be a big hurdle for you, whether it's in the creation of another oversight agency like this flood management and financing entity.
That's true. I should tell you, we are still litigating the implications of Proposition 208, and it's been in 218, I'm sorry. And it's been how many years now? 15 years?
10.
I think it's over 10. Mm-hmm. You can assume that bigot things like this will take 20 years to get through the court systems and have a complete understanding of what the courts say the law means.
Okay. Exciting. Eminent domain is pretty prominent in here in terms of your financing plans, but I didn't see anything about setting up a policy on looking for willing seller, willing buyer, you know, first as a priority, and then secondary using the power of eminent domain. It seemed like it was a very strong forward directive for the Delta plan. Am I misinterpreting that, or?
Legislation did not, as some legislation does, limit the authority to either recommend or anything else on eminent domain. As a matter of fact, existing state law allows the Department of Water Resources to utilize eminent domain for public water projects. Caltrans uses it. They prefer not to and go overboard trying to avoid it. And it's fair to say that, I heard a speech somebody gave once where they said, well, I'm opposed to eminent domain if I don't like the project that's being built, but I'm for it if I do. It's one of the things we're going to wrestle with. We have not made a determination on that.
Okay. And I think that pretty much wraps up those questions there.
Could I make one suggestion?
Yes.
We want to hear you out on the rest of the question. It'd be really helpful to us, in addition to the transcript and this testimony, if you and the Farm Bureau up in San Joaquin have a chance to itemize in writing these same points and add whatever you might not have been able to put into the record. Mm-hmm. If you look at our website, as Mr. Grindstaff suggested, we've gotten hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of suggestions, but we're starting to get very detailed, very specific, very thoughtful comments. And if they're in writing, we keep track of it. I won't ask Ms. Buchholz to explain it, but it's a very complicated system. It gives us a chance to respond to to that and to think about it. So for anybody in the audience on any of these things, I would urge you strongly, talk all you want tonight, but also write it down too, because you'll think of other things you didn't mention, and we need to know about them.
Well, I think that's good. You know, this is my first glance at the document. I'm sure I'll be looking at it again before you guys come back down to our county. And I actually serve as one of our representatives to the five-county Delta Caucus for our farm bureaus. We, too, have our own little group that gets together, and we did get together earlier this week. So we'll have representation at, you know, Concord, Clarksburg, you know, throughout the Delta in Sacramento. And we will put something probably more formalized together, but this is just kind of a first feel the water and see what's going on.
So, well, you tell your bosses if this is your first chance to comment after just skimming through the report, you hit probably 90% of the issues right off. They should pay you more money.
Well, I got a little raise, so I'm very thankful for that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, who's next? Gentleman in the leather jacket is reaching over to that blue form. No? Come on. Please don't be shy. This is very important for us. I know you think what's going on, but it's gathering the information, the comments, the hesitations, the support, the opposition, whatever you want to say about this process. We'd very much like to learn, very much like to hear from you. Mr. Fiorini, would you like to sing for 5 minutes and to see if that could discourage them from?
We conducted our first of these seven meetings last night in Diamond Bar. We received testimony from six people. We were finished in 35 minutes. Our chair, Chair Eisenberg, was unable to attend last night. I chaired the meeting. You've conducted a meeting that's lasted twice as long as ours last evening.
No one's ever accused me of being relaxed and casual before. I kind of like it. Seriously, is there anyone here who would like to add any comments, whether on this scoping issue or anything to the council, any subject generally related to what we do? Yes, sir. Please, could you get a microphone to the gentleman there? Okay. Hold on. Mike is coming your way. And if you would identify yourself, spell whatever the name for the court reporter, please.
My name is, Dr. Napoleon Washington, Jr. I'm the president of the Merced County NAACP, and the person that you had contacting community-based organizations to have them be a part of this proceeding tonight. As I began to peruse the material and try to understand exactly how water is impacting our community, I was able to witness over the last 2 years how when they shut off the Delta pumps, the impact that it had on the west side of the various counties up and down the valley, it was very dramatic. And begin to understand that where water flows, things can grow. And then to find that it was because of some smelt, it was troubling to me. And so tonight as I sit here and I'm trying to think of what this particular plan is supposed to do to provide better utilization of our water up and down the state, I'm conflicted. And yet I realize that we need to make better use of our resources. So my question tonight, as I sit here and I've tried to digest and understand everything that's being said, is how is that going to impact Merced County? What is it that we should be thinking about or concerned about regarding water? I know for years I've been in this valley for a long time. I grew up in the Bay Area. I used to fish in the Bay. And now I understand when I go back, you can't eat the fish out of the Bay. And yet, when I came to this area, we had an abundant water supply, and then I found out we're in a desert, and you don't always receive an ample supply of water. So if this plan that you're talking about is implemented, how will it impact our community? What will it do for us? And have I missed that as you've been talking tonight? You've been very eloquent in what you said, but I'm just trying to make sure I understand everything that's going on here.
Mr. Fiorini and I have been struggling for how to talk about the thematics of this for a while, and so let me give you kind of my take, and I'm going to ask Randy to take. Some things we've got to recognize that are beyond our control. And the first is changing weather patterns have led to an increasingly volatile weather pattern, increasingly volatile supply of rain and snow. Most of the water that comes into the state, about 97%, is rain and snow. And a portion of that is runoff that you can capture for human purposes or environmental purposes. There's a 3% of the water that comes from the Colorado River and a few other sources. But, you know, rain and snow is where we survive. Randy said to me, I think it was last week, that the wet years are getting wetter and the dry years are getting drier, and they're coming with less predictability. And if that's the case, and all the evidence seems to support it is, one of the things you face is that the current big water systems, the federal water system that was built in mostly in the 1950s, the state water system that followed in the 1960s, were based on plans that were developed 20, 30, 40, 50 years before that, and weather patterns that I think I heard last week might even be based on projections from the late 1800s up to the 1930s or 1940s. Like everything else, things change. And so the kinds of dams we have, where they're located, how much water they can hold, the amount of empty space that has to be allocated for flood control, the timing and releasing, all was done with a different set of criteria in mind. And Ms. Buchholz, you're the engineer expert, and you and Ms. McCauley, stop me if I'm just being outrageous. So number one is the water supply is becoming more volatile. And number two, we are not getting a constantly growing vast increase of water statewide. Pretty much what it's been in recorded history back to 1885. But, of course, in 1885, there were, I'm just guessing, 1.5 million people in California. They're now approaching 39 million people in California. Our total economy today is $1,900,000,000,000. And the water use patterns in the state, you know, there are water-rich areas, there are water-poor areas. That's the other thing you learn. There's no such thing as an average water year. There's no such thing as a typical picture of water use in California. It varies by region. But take it as a whole, as the legislation tells us to take it. If the water supply is more volatile, if the supply is not dramatically growing, footnote, people keep hoping that ocean desalination is going to solve the problem, and if the Delta ecosystem is continuing to decline, probably you were talking about the striped bass and the mercury content of striped bass on your fishing experience, but it's replicated in many other areas. But the striped bass you like to catch generally like to eat smelt. If they can't have smelt, they got to go find something else. All of our water use and all the ways we use water are linked one to the other. So I'll give you the Phil Eisenberg shorthand. We have big problems, but the world is not coming to an end. But what we're not going to be able to do is give everyone in California all the water they want, every time they want it, and for no cost or as cheap as possible. And that is the way the political debate about water tends to be. Everybody wants whatever they want, and somebody else's job to figure out to make it happen. I think we just got to be grown-ups about the issue, talk about it, reason it out, try to promote efficiency and conservation everywhere, try to get through, as this plan is trying to get through, the next 30, 50, hopefully to the year 2100. But, you know, these tensions and these finite supplies, every time you run up against them in every society on the earth, you hope for a miracle, a new technology that will allow you to allow Randy to irrigate 1,000 acres on one cup of water. Well, maybe the time will come when that, we don't know what it is. So anyway, that's my take. This is a conversation we're having right now as to how to talk about it.
Dr. Washington, is that?
Yeah.
To narrow it down to Merced County, I think there are two aspects to the Delta plan that will have a direct impact on those of us that live and work here in Merced County. One will have to do with water supply, and it depends where you are located in the county. We're blessed on the east side of Merced County with the Turlock Irrigation District and the Merced Irrigation District, founded in the 1880s and long developed water supplies, reliable water supplies on the Merced and the Tuolumne River that serve much of the east side of Merced County. However, on the east side, on the west side of the Merced County, become more dependent on the state federal water projects, which have fallen under into problems with ecosystem health in the Delta, thus reducing the reliable supply of water to growers in the western part of Merced County. The joblessness that you pointed out, the fallowed ground that you see along I-5 is related to problems in the Delta. Our charge is to try and find a balance that will restore reliable water supplies to the agricultural areas and at the same time find ways to enhance the ecosystem that seems to be having a negative impact on species like the Delta smelt and the salmon that pass through the Delta on their way from the eastern tributaries. The second issue, beyond water supply and its effect on the economy, will have to do with flood control. And many years we've experienced flooding in Merced along Bear Creek and in some cases along the Tuolumne and the Merced River. Some of that is related to the capacity of the channels that transport water through this area to the Delta. One of the things that will be looked at is developing a floodplain in and along the San Joaquin River prior to reaching the Delta channels to provide the ability to evacuate water from this area and prevent flooding. So that's being looked at very carefully. There's a valley-wide study that's underway that will be incorporated into the plan that we're working on that will hopefully lead to alleviating flooding during years of peak flows, such as, the most recent major flooding occurred in 1997. We came very close and had problems in some areas. I believe Bear Creek flooded in 2006, so 2005, something like that. So flooding and water supply will be the two most important aspects, I believe, for Merced County as we move forward with this Delta plan.
Thank you, Doctor. Okay, who's next? Yes, sir. Whoops. Can't I get you to hold that microphone and all right, let's see if we have anyone else. Since Mr. Fiorini lectured me about delaying the meeting, I'm going to run around the room and look seriously at all the people sitting here looking mysterious. Anything you want to say to us? We'd actually like to hear it. Please. Well, Mr. Fiorini? If I can't... I mean, I'm being polite, but I suppose we could lock the door and force them to talk before they get out. I don't know. All right, let's do this. Is there anyone who would like to talk to the council on something other than the scoping process? Like we should have 17 meetings down here and only here in the state of California. Whatever you want. Whatever you want. Okay. All right. Well, I think, Mr. Grindstaff, unless there are people banging on the door that we can't see or hear, we're going to wrap this one up, but I would like to encourage you, and Doctor, you also, if you have a chance to write down some of your questions and concerns and email them to us, or hard mail them to us, we'll post it on the web immediately, and it helps us just to develop ways to think about this. This process is moving fast, but you know, I'm a recovering politician, and my experience is if something doesn't move fast in politics, it simply doesn't move at all, because the choices are hard choices. There are no free, cheap, easy choices. And so any of your thoughts, any of your comments, any of your facts, any of your stories or narratives would be enormously helpful. I believe a bunch of the information at the table has our website address on it. If you would pick up a copy of that stuff out there, shoot us the email, and we'll get back to you as fast as we can. Get on our email list also. Ms. Buchholz?
Whenever your scoping comments come in, they're immediately sent to each of the council members. So this isn't like a, generally, if you've been involved in other scoping processes, they sometimes wait for a month or two to compile them. And everything's sent that day to each of the council members, who I know reads it because they ask questions.
Okay, Mr. Fiorini, anything else?
Nope. Thank everyone for coming.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. Thank you for taking the time out. We'll see the Farm Bureau up in Clarksburg or Sacramento or Concord or somewhere around there again. And thank you very much for coming. Doctor, thank you for coming. Good night.